The next item on the agenda is regarding our new economic development director. And Ms. Julie Wheatley has been appointed our economic development director, and she's here today, but this is her first day of work. So I probably should have waited till next week at least to bring her in here. But Julie has experience in marketing, sales, purchasing, for several businesses, local businesses, as well as she worked for the Salisbury-Wicomico County Economic Development Department. She has a bachelor's degree from Salisbury University, and we'd like to welcome her, and I look forward to working with her, and I think she'll be a proactive economic development director. And I know Hal and I are glad to see her here for some help with economic development.
Good morning.
Good morning, yeah. And thank you all. Yeah. Just wanted.
Do you know where your office is yet?
Yes, I was there. I was there for about an hour this morning. I want to thank and I look forward to the opportunity of helping Sussex County bring jobs in here. First thing I want to do is get an inventory of what's available, and the second thing I want to do is prioritize. So anything that you guys can let me know what you want to see or don't want to see or that'll give me a good start. I want to communicate with the business community as well, but I'd like to start with your input first.
Excellent. Any questions, John? We appreciate. Only thing I'll say is I'm not big on handing out pamphlets. I think I'm big on going out and promoting Sussex County for business, and that's that. And I'm a huge promoter of that. Thank you very much, and good luck.
Thank you. Good luck.
Thanks, Joel.
Mr. Baker?
Okay. The next item is appointment to Advisory Committee for the Aging and Adults with Physical Disabilities. And I think we have one remaining opening, Mr. Rogers.
I'd like to appoint Francine Shockley. She's from Lincoln area.
Mm-hmm. Is there a second to that?
Second.
We move to second that we appoint Ms. Shockley to the Aging and Adult with Physical Disabilities Committee. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes, motion passed.
I'd like to appoint Shirley O'Neill to the Library Advisory Board. And I guess, is that a three-year term? She's taking Janice Tranberg's place. Is that three years?
Yes, three-year term, yes.
Second that.
Second.
It's moved to second that we appoint Ms. O'Neill to the Library Board for Mr. Dukes, Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes, motion passed. Five has been moved. Six has been moved. Administration report.
Okay. The next administrator's report, we have several items. First is Sussex County Paramedic Competition. Our paramedic team of Holly Donovan, Stuart Hensley, Joe Wicks, and Robbie Murray placed third in the international competition in Israel last week. We wish to congratulate our paramedics for this outstanding accomplishment. Over 40 teams competed. Our team has placed in the top 10 in national competitions and was first a few years ago. Each of the other teams in the competition included nurses and physicians, while our team only included paramedics. Attached is a press release regarding this accomplishment. And they did very well. Delaware State Police report. Attached is a copy of the Delaware State Police report for July 2008. There were 4,851 complaints, 4,327 traffic arrests, and 1,164 criminal arrests during the month in Sussex County. And then Delaware Solid Waste Authority recycle program. Attached is a copy of a report from Delaware Solid Waste showing that in August, 20,498 pounds of recycled material was collected at the Georgetown site, which represents a substantial amount for a relatively new site, according to Mr. Von Stetten. The County Council approved opening this site in the parking lot by the West Complex, and I know Mr. Guy helped with that project. Thank you.
Excellent. Any questions, Mr. Baker? Morning, one more time, Mike.
Good morning. I have one item on my agenda this morning. It's in regard to a contract amendment with Urban Engineers. I'm sort of subbing for Jim Hicken on this. Mr. Hicken was contacted last month by the FAA. They indicated that they had some grant money that wasn't going to be used, and would we have any available projects to make use of that grant money? The one that he thought would be the best use of the grant money, and I should mention the contract amendments in the amount of $32,000. Basically, it would be an obstruction analysis and a review of the minimums of our existing runways, the main runway 422 and the new runway we're constructing 1028. What it represents is an opportunity to reduce our minimums. In other words, when you fly into the airport right now, you need to have a visual, and I'm not an expert on this, Jim is, but basically 1 mile of visibility. And what we would like to is try to figure out a way to reduce those minimums. If we could get it down to 3/4, you know, 1/2 mile would be great, but if we could even get it down to 3/4 of a mile, that would increase the number of days that aircraft could come and leave at the airport. So if we have a lower ceiling right now, if it's below a mile, you can't take off and leave. However, you know, if we could get that minimum down lower, it would increase the usability of the runway. So what this will do is do mapping, locate any obstructions. That's the other thing we want to take a look at. Somewhere in the past, the FAA has determined that there's some kind of obstruction out there that, again, that also impacts the ability of us to reduce our minimum, not just the ceiling. So this would allow us to do that research and then also do the appropriate surveying that, again, we might be able to use that data to reduce the minimums at the airport. And that's basically the gist of the project in a nutshell.
Is this going to require us to buy more property?
No. It's just a study that would help us reduce our minimums as they exist today.
So that would allow planes to fly into our airport, use the airport?
On more days. Some days they might now currently be restricted from taking off and landing. They would now be able to do that. Basically, there could be an old tower or, you know, that existed in FAA. Either maybe it doesn't even exist anymore, or that the FAA had it determined to be the wrong elevation, and we could research that and say, or we could alter the flight path a little bit so that that obstruction was no longer in a particular flight path, again, would give us an opportunity to reduce the minimums. It's FAA funded. Again, we'll get 95% from the FAA, 2.5% from the state. The $32,000 contract, so the cost to us is $800 to do this. So
we could do the study, and then we take it from there.
Right.
The bottom line.
And it may have a great benefit to the airport. We may find out we're no better off than we were. But at least we know what the obstacles that are out there. And it may also help us to work if somebody wanted to place a new tower, either, you know, limit the height or affect the location that would better allow the airport to better operate and maybe allow that particular item to move forward.
Excellent. Any other questions? You have a motion?
Be it moved that the contract amendment number 2 with Urban Engineers Incorporated be approved in the amount of $32,000 and the county engineer be authorized to execute documents to secure a grant from the FAA.
Motion, John?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. We approved the contract amendment as stated. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Russell, you finally made it with the Milton Library, huh?
I just missed it. I was upstairs working on something. Here this morning to ask council to award the contract for the second floor completion at the Milton Library. Just a quick review, the proposed work that we're talking about is a fit up of the second floor shell that was constructed when we did the last work for the library and expanded it. We built an empty shell upstairs with the purpose of creating additional rooms and tutoring offices and those kind of things. So we're finally at a position to build the tutor rooms, a meeting room, bathrooms, and there's a small kitchen upstairs to be able to serve the facilities, as well as an outside stairway. Passed out to you copies of the bids that were received back on July the 30th. We received 6 bids. The lowest bid was Bob Smith Contractors of Avondale, Pennsylvania, at $719,000. The next low bid was $834,000. You'll notice that two of them actually came in exactly the same amount there, so kind of an interesting coincidence. We reviewed the bids. We feel that they meet our requirements. We did receive one bid protest from one of the other bidders concerning the low bid, and we have reviewed that bid protest with our county attorney, with Jim Griffin, and we've determined that it was a minor deficiency and that we can move forward with the bid award. So I'm here to recommend a bid award to the low bidder, Bob Smith Contractors, at the price of $719. Answer.
What are they doing
questions?
Up there, Mr. Rogers? Gold plating that bad boy?
We've been trying to get this started for 3 years.
Yeah.
I so move, Mr. President.
We don't have that much in the library, do we?
I have a motion if you'd like me to read it.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Be it moved based upon the recommendation of the consulting architect, Studio Jade, and the engineering department that the bid submitted for the Sussex County project number 07-04, Milton Library, second floor completion, be awarded to Bob Smith Contractors of Avondale, PA, at the base bid amount of $719,000.
So moved, Mr. President.
What a question.
No question.
What is that, what's that renovations costing us per square foot?
I wish, I don't have that number for you.
How many square feet is it, Ross? Do you know off the top of your head?
No, I don't, unfortunately.
Hold up.
It's the whole second floor.
But they're not putting a...
Well, and there's other work in addition to it, because we have, there's some additional things that are being done in the adjoining areas that were not, that have been added since the original work was done, but it's not finished. We have some floor work that has to be finished and some modifications there. So it's not just for, strictly for that area, but we are talking two bathrooms, two handicapped accessible bathrooms and a kitchen on that floor space. So you have a lot of mechanical work that has to be done.
It's not $719,000 worth, though.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the bathroom and a lot cheaper than that.
Is the elevator already
but
there?
You can,
that had to be
no, the elevator is already there. But you can see that it's the low bid by quite a bit. The other ones were quite a bit higher. So,
the library you drop out.
To include what?
Make a motion, Mr. President. I made a motion.
I understand. There was a question, though. We're listening to Mr. Duke.
Okay. Okay. He's happy.
Any other questions, Mr. Duke?
No, he's happy now.
I don't think he is. You have a second that motion?
Susie, you vote in his place.
Excuse me?
Come on. In his place.
Need a second.
Second.
Thank you.
There we go. Thank you. It's moved to second that we approve the contract as stated. Mr. Cope.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
I'll vote no. I think this is one of those projects we could put off until we get our budget crisis under control.
Mr. Dukes.
I don't. The reason I'm going to vote no is not because of Mr. Phillips. I think it's something we ought to put off, but I think it's excessive for the amount of work we're getting done, two bathrooms and the kitchen and renovating the second floor. I think it's I think it's way too much money. I'd like to see it done in a fashion that we could get local people that could bid on it, instead of making this bid spec so complicated that they can't bid on it. It cost them weeks to prepare a bid and all that. I think we need to simplify our way of getting things accomplished. We can get it done. Less money than that. I vote no.
It's a couple of months now. He's just come back.
Mr. Rogers.
There's a lot of work to be done there. I vote yes. I want to see it completed.
I guess, I'm going to have to go with Mr. Rogers and Mr., but I do want to say that, you know, it's...
You're leading off.
You know, it, this project's been going on for how many years? I mean, it's been forever, and the money's been allocated in the budget.
About 2 years, so.
Right.
Started about before me.
So, my vote is yes, motion passed.
And you agreed with Mr. Rogers and who?
You.
I just wanted you to say the name.
Does that make you feel good then?
Well, yeah, you just said Mr.
Yeah, I understand.
I understand.
Thanks, Russell. Bob? Good morning.
I'm here this morning.
Vote against this one if you want.
I'm here this morning for change order one for the South Coastal Library renovations contract, 0604, under construction by Nason Construction, Inc. This change order consists of six potential changes and results in a credit of $6,212 to the contract. Excuse me. The first is a revision to several of the masonry foundation walls. We converted the concrete from concrete, stone, and block, which saved, you know, is basically a labor saving and a time saving, and that was a credit of $2,000. The second was the front bioretention basin enlargement. Bioretention is basically we're taking the roof runoff to put it into bioretention before it goes into the sediment pond, stormwater basin, before it goes out. We had to add those so that we could get the DENREC approval. And the last minute change.
We sell those rain barrels.
Yeah, the rain barrels. We plant them.
$99 a piece, man.
And the front one, unfortunately, had to be sized a little larger at the last minute, and it didn't hit the structural drawing. So we had to enlarge it, and that added a cost of $1,742. The third is, of course, the fire marshal in their review requested two more emergency outside lights on the doors, and that was an extra cost of $548. The fourth was revisions to light fixtures along the north side of the building. We, excuse me, we changed up the size because of being embedded in the concrete wall was too large, so we reduced the size of them, and that became a credit of $2,548. The fifth was changing some what they call FX7 lights in the concrete wall, that we put some fixtures in the soffit like these, and that resulted in a credit of $954. And the last of the six was that there was some stainless steel railing around the reading garden area. Well, the drawings inadvertently showed it going out the wing walls of the steps, so by deleting that, we got a credit of $3,000. So it totals for all these changes a total credit of $6,212 for this change order. Any questions?
Go ahead with it, Bob. I think you're going to get the easiest.
Okay. motion, be it moved, based upon the recommendation of Sussex County Engineering Department's consultant, Studio Jade, that the change order one for Sussex County Project 0604 South Coastal Library renovations be approved, which decreases the contract amount by $6,212 for a new total of $4,197,788.
Motion, Joe?
So moved.
Second.
Moved to second, we approve change order number one as stated. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers? Excuse me, Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
My vote is yes also. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you, gentlemen. Have a good day.
Mr. Kelly? Second time in front of us, maybe. I think it was something like that.
Good afternoon, I guess. Good. Okay, I'm appearing before council today to present change order number two for airframe maintenance and technology building, Sussex County project number 0702, under construction by Richard Y. Johnson and Son Incorporated. The change order consists of nine potential changes and results in a cost increase of $3,950.58 to the contract. I'll just briefly run through these nine changes. The first is a credit due to a design change of the front entrance. in the original design, there was a stairway with ramps, and it was changed to just a one-hole ramp. This change resulted in a credit of $3,510.90. Second change in contract was due to the addition of hardware to existing doors that were already located in the hangar. This change was of an addition of $2,117.50. The third change was to add a floor drain in the sprinkler room. This charge, this change resulted in addition of $445.28. The fourth consisted of painting the entire exterior of the building. The original design only called for the front facade to be painted, but after going back and looking at the building, we realized the whole building needed to be completely scraped, pressure washed, and painted. This resulted in an increase of $11,357.50. The fifth change was due to the need for door sweeps, thresholds, weather stripping, and other miscellaneous hardware to existing doors in the building. This change resulted in $560.45. The sixth is for deletion of bronze plaques that were originally in the contract. Deltek has agreed to supply these plaques for us, so we were able to get a credit of $6,040 for this. The seventh change in the contract is a deletion of the general contractor supplying fire extinguishers for the building. The existing building already had extinguishers, and we were able to utilize those in the renovation. This resulted in a credit of $654. The last two changes were results in a reduction of scope of work for the electrical and mechanical contractors, which were related to the installation of the paint booth, and these were credits of totaling $685.25. The nine potential change results in an increase of $3,590.58 to the existing contract sum of $707,067.25, resulting in a new contract sum of $710,658.83. Also, as a result of change orders 1 and 2, the contractor required a time extension to complete the changes. This resulted in an extension of 108 days to the contract. Any questions?
Questions, Jim? And the Deltek has possession of the building as we speak. They have permission to start putting their stuff in.
Yes.
Substantial completion is as of.
I also have a substantial completion. Yeah. I'll go through after this change order.
All right, let's get the first one out of the way.
Being moved based upon the recommendation of the county architectural and engineering consultants Andrew W. Booth and the Sussex County Engineering Department, that change order number 2 for county project number 0702, airframe maintenance and technology building, be approved in the credit amount of $3,590.58, which increases the total contract sum from $67.25 to $710,658.83.
Motion, gentlemen.
Excuse me.
Make a motion.
Thank you.
Second.
It's moved to second that we approve the balancing change order as stated. Mr. Cole?
Yeah.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes,
motion passed.
Thank you. Second is for substantial completion of the building. I'm appearing before council to present substantial completion for airframe maintenance and technology building, Sussex County Project 0702, under construction by Richard Y. Johnson & Son. Quick summary, the project notice to proceed was dated November 21st, 2007, with a completion date of May 23rd, 2008. Through the change order time extensions, this was revised to September 8th, 2008. The project was substantially complete on September 8th, 2008. I have a motion.
Please.
Be it moved, based upon the recommendation of the county architectural and engineering consultants Andrew W. Booth and Sussex County Engineering Department, that the Sussex County Council grant substantial completion effective September 8th, 2008 for Sussex County Project Number 0702 Airframe Maintenance and Technology Building, and that final payment be made and any held retained be released in accordance with the terms and conditions of the contract documents.
Motion, gentlemen.
Make that motion.
Second.
Moved and seconded that we grant this plan substantial completion as stated. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you very much. Susie?
Thank you. First grant, Nanticoke Rotary Club.
That's mine. I would like to give them $10,000 out of mine. They are doing some major renovations to two of their transitional homes that they have in Seaford.
Second.
Moved and seconded that we grant $10,000. Mr. Dukes? Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes.
Laurel Historical Society.
That's for the cookhouse. They are renovating that. They are trying to get the painting done and some other renovations. I'd like to give them $3,500.
Second.
Moved and seconded we're gonna grant $35 for Mr. Dukes. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes. Motion passed.
Laurel Fire Department, they are buying new chairs and tables and so forth for their meeting room, and I would like to give them $5,000 for that. It's costing them more than that, but I told them I'd give them $5,000.
Second.
So we moved a second to grant $5,000 for Mr. Cole's. I mean, excuse me, Mr. Dukes.
That's fine. Cole will be fine.
Got my name on it.
Laurel likes them over there.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Got you worried? Do I have you worried?
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yeah.
Yes, motion passed.
Mr. Phillips, you want to do anything on the Laurel alumni?
Sure.
I'd like to make a motion to give $500.
Quiet today.
I'll give $250 for mine.
$500 for mine, $250 for Mr. Phillips.
Second.
We moved and seconded we grant $250 for Mr. Phillips, $500 for Mr. Dukes. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes, motion passed.
I'm done.
Boys and Girls Club of Delaware, the Oak Orchard and Riverdale. Club.
To you, Mr. Cole?
I think. Yes, I'd like to give a...
$130,000.
Where is that letter here? Let me see. Yeah, I'd like to give $2,500 of my funding to the Boys and Girls Club.
Is there a second then?
Wait a minute.
Second.
It's been moved to second. We grant $25 for Mr. Cole. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes. Motion passed.
Del Mar Middle and Senior High School.
I'd give $500 for mine.
Second, please.
Second.
Second, $500 from Mr. Phillips. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes. Motion passed.
Milton Seniors Club.
I'd like to give them $5,000.
Second.
It's moved second. We have $5,000 from Mr. Rogers. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes.
Milton Historical Society.
$10,000.
Second.
Moved and seconded. We get $10,000 for Mr. Rogers. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes. Motion passed. Okie dokie. We're back to four and five. Five and six, or four and five, I guess.
Five and six.
Five and six.
Okie dokie. Okay. The first item is concerns. Options regarding variances for small accessory buildings. We discussed this a little bit last week at the council meeting, and we have heard concerns from some of the public regarding the cost of these variances. So what we did is try to put together a couple of options. There are other options, but Mr. Abbott's here today, but one option would be to no longer require a variance for replacement of a small accessory building less than 120 square feet. The replacement building must be the same size and the same footprint as the previous building. a building permit would still be required, but a variance would not be required, again, assuming it is the same size and the same footprint as the previous building that it replaced. The previous building must have been allowed by an approved building permit or grandfathering. That is one option, basically not to require a variance for replacement of a shed-type building, small
existing,
building.
Existing outbuilding, would it be? Is it strictly an outbuilding, Dave, or would it be?
Yes, that's what we intended.
Now, we're talking about, when it comes to a variance, it means it's because it's not placed properly to begin with, right?
Yes, it could be a setback, or could be a set, right, they're not in compliance.
So a guy who wants to put a shed that's in compliance would still be paying $400?
No, he wouldn't need a variance. He would pay for a building permit, which would be a minimal amount. It's like $10 or something like that for a building
permit. Wouldn't need a variance. It's only if you need a variance.
We wouldn't require a variance.
So these are the only ones, so we're talking about a thing that's non-conforming to replace it. When they have the ability to come into compliance, why wouldn't we make them put the new one?
Have the ability, I don't think.
Well, if they don't, if they can prove they don't, then they ought to resort to this. But they have the ability to avoid the non-conforming use and bring it into compliance. Why wouldn't we have an ordinance that would encourage that?
Well, that's what we have now. And we have the concern that we've heard from the public is regarding the cost of the variance for replacement of a shed, basically.
And that's implying that they still put it back in a non-conforming spot.
Yes, that's right.
So now, maybe it was placed there, but I'm just saying, no. When you have a variance, it's a public hearing, and et cetera, et cetera. So we're basically putting a new one back and avoiding a public hearing.
Well, you may prefer the second option, or you may prefer to stay.
I think people still need, if I've had a shed next to my property, let's say, and it's been illegally placed, and they've had, you know, either some of them don't have variances, some get a variance, you know, whatever. And it's, you know, bothered me because it's so close to my property. Now then, I've always wanted to get it, you know, properly placed. So anyway, by the first option, they could avoid having to get it, you know, properly placed.
Well, only if they were not, if they had a building permit or had a previous variance, and if it was legally there,
I think that if we have somebody who's got a variance,
mm-hmm. we're talking about,
and they typically are granted because it's after the fact. A lot of times they're placed and somebody discovers it, not when they want to do it up front. It's usually after the fact, right? Isn't that typical, right? Anyway,
it's probably 90%.
I think the second method, where we just make a dramatic reduction, but then they still have to require a variance to so people have an opportunity, the neighbors, to speak if they want to have that thing close to them or not.
The second option of reducing
that's my gut feeling right off when I listen to this, and it doesn't require a lot of tampering with our current ordinance. All it does is just reduce the fee in those particular, or just a replacement.
Why should they be granted, because and somebody that didn't need the variance be cut some slack?
Well, it's just because of the replacement, I guess, because it always has been there, and if they want to replace it and still put it in a place that's non-conforming, mm-hmm. then you ought to give the people the opportunity to, again, to say, wait, I could live with the first couple of years, but they've just been a bunch of junk and it's too close to my property, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that we need to go back to giving people the ability to speak as to what their neighbors are doing when it's non-complying. Now, if they come back and put it into compliance and use the proper setbacks, there's no issue. It's just a building permit.
That makes what?
It's these that are so close. I just think that we need to
keep
the opportunity for
manufacturer parks
hearing
in the Sussex County. Some of the older ones.
Number two would still have a public hearing. They'd pay $100. They'd have to go back through again and to keep it in non-compliance.
Yes.
If it rots away, right? It's like a billboard or something. If it rots away, you got to come back again.
I guess my next question, Dave, and not to cloudy the whole situation, is I know the Board of Adjustments
requires a survey.
Right. Because I know there's some complaints because, you know, if we reduce the fee and we still require a survey and they don't have a survey, which should have put on.
Well, life is not free.
No, I understand.
I mean, there's certain things we need to do for us to keep legal.
I've got no problem, because guess what? I had to do it too. I understand.
That's what I'm saying. But people need to have some requirements of them, and then we need to know where it is, and somebody needs to go out and inspect it. And we need to have some kind of, I guess, some measurements. You just can't be guessing all this stuff. So
the problem,
cost of doing living.
That a lot of these parks are, there's not boundary lines. They're just a common lease that you've got 40 feet wide and 100 feet long. So you really don't know where the line, where you, I mean, if it's got 5 feet off the line or the back, you know, I don't know. There's no line there. It's just a common lease that you've got.
For sheds, it's 5 foot setbacks on.
From where? I mean,
from the
there's
lot,
not, there's
from
not
the lot
between
line.
They have lot lines.
They're supposed to be marked.
They got them. They just don't follow them.
We require them to be marked. So
yes.
Get a survey.
Yeah. Oh, you're doing now, but
now they're getting
surveys. Yeah, years ago they didn't.
2 years ago, if I lived in a park and I wanted to apply for a variance, I could just bring a drawing in that I drew up and say, of my lot.
Oh, okay.
Just saying that, you know, I want to be 3 feet from the property line, and I could go place the shed. I could be 2 feet. I mean, without a survey.
And then, our inspectors, if anybody goes out and to verify, say there's a complaint, you need to have something to go by, and that's why, Dale, they're going to need to have something. It just, everybody wants to get something for nothing, I guess. And we've reduced the money they save on now on our, if we did number two, you're saving $300.
$300.
A survey on those things cost only about $300.
Right.
So it's a wash, and I think we've stepped up to the plate, but I don't think we can avoid having surveys because we're moving into the 21st century.
Something.
It's time to get
with the program.
Time to get figure out what this stuff is.
I don't know, you leave it like it is and let them roll. It doesn't make any difference.
No, I say I don't mind number two reducing if it's a replacement. Okay.
We did. I asked Mrs. Roth to do an analysis of the cost, which was done, I think, two or three years ago. But she came out to about $382 for a Board of Adjustment case, just on average, because there's not a whole lot of difference in cost, whether it's a shed or a house or whatnot. We also looked at Kent and Newcastle County they have a more complicated fee structure. Each of them, but for the most part, it looked like they were each charging about $250 for a variance. So they do charge for a variance of this kind for a small accessory building. It looked like they would charge about $250, where
that's
we
the first
charge
time.
$400.
First time we're talking about. Yeah, it sounds to me like you're.
We currently charge $400.
Right.
So if we, you know, so.
Well.
So we're going to lose $281 roughly.
What did we vote on last week? Didn't we vote that nobody had any interest in doing anything?
No, we deferred to get.
Yeah, I think there was a lot on the agenda.
I remember some conversations said I don't think we've got enough problem to worry about it.
Well, that's where we
that might have been something I don't recollect, but I think number two, gentlemen, is just my recommendation. We just kind of stick with the same program and just reduce the cost, and maybe that'd be the easiest way. And try that. If there is sympathy to do something for these situations. And how many situations like this do we have a year, maybe? A lot? A few?
A bunch.
Well, I would say there's more than we probably think.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a pretty good jag.
In older parks.
There's older parks.
Yes.
Your district.
Right. Yeah,
that's right. I mean, I'm just saying. I think we need surveys. I think we need certain things. We need to be able to, to figure out where these things.
They are requiring that now.
Right. Right. So I don't think we need to back off of everything, but I could live with reducing the price for replacement of a
shed
that's already been granted one variance. Now, if somebody gets picked up on a shed that's never had a variance granted. Are we going to reduce it for, in other words?
We would just reduce the fee
everything
for
a
small
shed would be $100.
Right. And just being parks.
Do we lose money with our county? Are we going to be, David? Are you saying then the county tax base would be subsidizing the county's role in granting that?
Yes.
by the time we advertise, so we would lose money.
Sure.
I think years ago, Dale, didn't we kind of take a position? We brought all these fees and everything, so we wouldn't lose money. We at least ought to break even. So what would be breaking even, David?
$382, I think you said.
Is that what you said?
$382. $382, but it's,
and maybe we better,
it's averaging the cost out.
All right.
And that,
then I'll tell you what, I would move then we don't do anything.
Okay.
I don't think we're in a financial situation where we should be losing money in any of the departments.
You think it's something y'all can handle after the first of the year?
Dale, I think so.
Mr. Phillips?
I think Phillips and I could handle this in 2 minutes.
I do think the 400 is a hardship on many folks on limited incomes or fixed incomes. I think that we often talk about how we need these departments to break even, so whenever somebody's got a little bit of a loss, we're quick to jack the fee up. But in all those years that some of these departments had excessive surpluses, I don't remember us ever reducing a fee. It all seemed to work out in the wash. And I would think that reducing the fee would be appropriate on these small accessory buildings.
Okay.
If you went in favor of reducing the fee, it's going to be a small building, not bigger than 10 by 12. It still would have to be in the same footprint. Is that correct?
That's the way I read it.
Yes. Okay.
I mean, the only other consideration is, do we discourage people from improving the properties with new structures that are not going to exceed the existing footprint? You know, if somebody has a shed they want to replace, they find out it's going to cost them, you know, a lot of money just to replace a shed no bigger than the one they have. Well, maybe they'll leave the old junker there for another 5 years, and have we really done anything to improve the community?
Well, these are, Vance, if it doesn't need a variance, there's many, many people are placing sheds that are in compliance, so they're not doing this. This is only the ones that are having to want to get too close to their neighbor, and that's the ones where we need to make sure that those people have the ability to say, wait, I don't want it that close to me, or it's okay.
It could be, because it could be 35% or to set back either one.
So, and the assumption that all of them are on fixed income, all these issues are on fixed incomes, I mean, there's no way we can make that assumption. It's just, you just can't make that assumption. So I don't know if you want to put a means testing type of thing to it, where if somebody wants to come in and apply to say that, you know, I'm on a fixed income and I can't afford it, and we have some standards that they'd have to meet, okay, maybe we ought to look to that on any of our permits, but just to assume that somebody has a shed on a fixed income and needs help to reduce, I don't think that is an assumption we can make.
Okay.
So I just say.
You got anything else? Okay. Ms. Dukes?
I've always been supported user fees for whatever the service is that they're asking for, and lower it to $100, we'd be losing almost $275 per each one that came before us. For that reason, I wouldn't support that one. I think, and it's a tough call, because we all got, I'm sure, about 20 pages of people don't want, that people want us to exempt, and we got that don't want it to be exempt. So it's out there both ways. However, I don't see a problem with it if you're replacing it with the same square footage or the same footprint, that we don't do anything. I mean, get a building permit, and if it's replace the same size, then go with that. But if you're making it bigger, then you ought to have to go through the process.
So you prefer option one, Mr. Dukes?
I do.
Mr. Phillips, you backtracking? You agree with one?
I mean, I'm going beyond just the replacement. I'm saying, well, I agree with Mr. Dukes. Number one is appropriate.
Okay.
As long as the same square footage or same footprint. Hmm.
Do it, and well, I'll let then. Go ahead.
I'm aware
of that. Okay. I just got one.
You agree with me?
Yes.
Me?
Would you?
No.
You agree with Mr. Cole?
I didn't hear my.
I think you're making $100. 2-2.
I like to hear my name.
Twice a day, somebody agrees with you.
Just leave it as is.
I like it when they do agree.
Write this down.
I know, but when they agree, I like them to at least to say my last name.
Oh, you like that? never mind. I won't. I guess my question is that I've really got no problem with one. But should we add in this, or do we require now that they, if we do this, that they have to have a written from the homeowners association, you know.
Yeah, we do require now.
A letter from the park manager.
From the park manager or whoever the head honcho is down there. Right. Just a sec. Hal, you have anything you wanted to?
Mr. President, or council, what I was going to try to do is just share with you the experience I've had with this, because I've worked with this somewhat directly in Sea Air particularly, because that's one of the oldest parks in the area.
They need drains.
I'm not sure that I heard all the issue discussed, and Mr. Dukes has a grip on one of the facets of this argument. And I want to try and explain to you what I've seen, if you have a minute.
Sure.
Sea Air in particular was developed in the late 50s and early 60s, and as you said, many of those homes were put in there many, many years ago on a very small footprint, and it was just a small 10-foot-wide, 50-foot-long mobile home on a small lot. And then as time evolved, people would add a porch or maybe add a shed for their lawnmower, and now they have a piece of land that's theirs. They have a lease on it, but it's almost completely covered with porch and shed and their home. And God forbid if one of those homes were to burn, it'd be very difficult to replace that 10-by-50 with anything built today because they don't build 10-by-50s anymore. So right away, you'd be replacing the old home with a larger home, probably. So that's the issue. I'm going to leave that aside. We're talking about sheds. But the point is this. Many of the sheds in Sea Air are this far from the home and this far from the porch. They're very close, right. Very close proximity. And there's no place to go with these. The lots are very tiny, much smaller than what our code requires today. Now, last year, as we worked with some complaints in that community, Mr. Baker thought that the smart thing to do, and I don't mean to speak for him, but what he did was he offered a grandfathering point in time, where I think it was November of last year, Dave. He said, everything that's here now stays, it's okay, it's conforming, it's grandfathered, to stop all these arguments and all this bickering in the community, which there was a lot of that going on. So if you've got a shed there, it stays, it's okay, it's grandfathered in. But anything from this point forward, you're going to comply with the code.
Yeah,
makes sense.
That was a good ruling.
Right, and I think that was
brilliant.
Exactly. Brilliant. Now, here's what's happened.
Give yourself a raise, Dave.
We have one lady in particular. I'll use this one example because it's the most vivid that I've worked with. She had one of those little metal sheds that you've all seen. They're 25 or 30 years old. And it's a little put-together shed. It was right up against her home, and the fence went right by her property here. So it just fit between her mobile home and her fence.
And her neighbor.
Well, her neighbors are here. It was between the fence and the shed and the home. But it was one of those old metal jobbers. It got all rusted. It looked bad. She wanted to replace it. Now, what she did wrong was she didn't come to us first or go to the park first. She just replaced it arbitrarily. Now, she even misled me because I thought she put an 8x10 shed back on an exact 8x10 shed from before. She took me out and showed me the footprint. She said, see, there's where my old shed was. And I put the new shed right on top of it. I said, gee, you're right. It is an exact replacement per size. That's what I thought. But our folks here in the office dug up for me the permit where the shed was placed many, many years ago, and it was a 6x6. So she did go over size. And I'm not sure you want to permit that. But what Mr. Dukes was arguing was if she wanted to replace her 6x6 with another 6x6, maybe that's something we should do without going through a survey and a variance and all that. So that's really the argument that the community would like to see, the opportunity to replace that 6x6 with another 6x6 on the same footprint without spending $1,100 for a survey and a variance. That's been the argument. I don't get into the whole thing about how much income they have, right? That's none of my business. But that's been their argument. Their argument has been that if they had a shed for 10 or 15 years, it was there before the grandfathering, all the properties got grandfathered to stay like they are, and the shed is rotten or it's fallen apart and needs to be replaced, they want to be able to do that, the same size shed, without having to go through the survey and or variance, the cost of a variance. That was their argument. So since they're not here today, I thought I would at least for them, since I work with them as well as I work with you, let you know what they were looking for exactly. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It would take an ordinance to do this if you decide to go for this number one. Is that my correct, Shane?
Yes, it would.
I don't know if you could do it by a policy or not.
We don't like policies.
No.
I think it would take an amendment to an ordinance, so I don't, if you give me, if the sense of council is to tell us to come with an appropriate ordinance, that's really,
I think number,
that's
I
all
think,
we need.
I think the majority council would shift toward number one.
We don't necessarily need a vote, because the vote would be on the ordinance. It would
right.
implement it.
But we don't want to proceed. Is there, I think there's support for number one.
Okay, and we will move in that direction and work on an ordinance to make that amendment, and then that would come back to, of course, public hearing and for your final consideration.
At the middle of January.
Mm-hmm. Could be. Okie doke, open space.
Okay, the next item is open space ordinance, and
I think everybody has. Everybody got copies?
We have a draft of an ordinance that Mr. Griffin worked up that defines open space within subdivisions and developments.
I know, I left it. I read it.
It's based on recommendations from our land use plan consultants, and it's as per the our land use plan. It would permit within open space recreation facilities, recreation ponds, buffers, sidewalks, as long as they're not in street right-of-ways, spray irrigation areas. It would not permit within open space land within lots, building footprints, certain impervious surfaces such as streets and parking lots. It would not permit stormwater ponds or tidal wetlands. And again, that's just a draft for your consideration and possible introduction.
It ended up being sort of long because we had to put the definitions in the subdivision ordinance and also the definition in the zoning ordinance, and then fold those definitions in for AR1, AR2, MR, UR, RPC, conditional uses, and the environmentally sensitive developing area overlay zone.
Right.
Mr. Cole?
Yeah, I got the one point that I've made the point before, and I think even Mr. Rogers alluded to, old Jack Allen even was concerned about this back in the old days. So this is kind of festered out there. When developers come in and they propose a subdivision and they propose a golf course, public golf course, that's a use of a land. They've already, that's going to be a use. And then they go over and then they, many times it's separate. It's still owned by a separate entity. They buy and sell them. Anyway, whatever. So it becomes a commercial use. All right? So there is a land use has been granted to X amount of acres for the golf course. And then the rest of it has become a subdivision. And then I would just think that we shouldn't calculate the golf course twice. In other words, they're basically getting the benefits of it twice. They're getting a land use of it being a commercial golf course set aside on their plans as a golf course, and then you should calculate then the rest of the area as the residential and the open space, so people can benefit from it. The people in the community, many times, in the bear traps situation in Ocean View, which is in the town of Ocean View, the golf course is separately owned by the developer, and the residents don't have any benefits from it other than it's there, it's on their property.
So basically what you're suggesting is that we would add a G under things not to be included, which would be commercial right. golf courses for which a fee must be paid to use the service. Well,
that's right. As long as if it's part of the homeowners association, there are subdivisions, and I think Cripple Creek, tell me if I'm wrong, I think Cripple Creek, you actually buy a lot and you're owner of the golf course. It's okay. They're the owner. There's a connection made. And I just think that, once you get a piece of ground and it's got a designated use, you shouldn't be able to then use it again for calculation of density or something for the rest of it. So basically you've been able to benefit from it a couple times, and that's the only area I see that there's a weakness of where it's just, I just don't think it's appropriate. So
you're saying, Mr. Cole, because it's for commercial use,
that's become a designated
use of that part, that whatever the golf course is.
But that still is open space.
Well, I know it's open space, but so is...
Well, that's what we're talking about here. I mean, we're not...
No,
you're talking about C1 or CR1.
Yeah. You're talking about, when you talk about the buffers in the forested area, that's part of the homeowners association. That's like on the perimeter, et cetera. The owners benefit from it. They can have walking trails through it and things like that. Conservation easements, something else, sidewalks not located, whatever. All these other things the people can benefit from, but you're using the land twice, Dale.
They can benefit by looking at them. What else is open space good for, except looking at it and saying,
"No, I don't mind
a beautiful piece of open space, grass. You know, there's no homes."
Well, why don't you say then the neighbors have the open space and they don't need it on their site or something like that. But then they'll go calculate that farm next door. Hey, that's open space out there. We're going to use that calculation for our density.
Everybody benefits.
You shouldn't use it for a density calculation because they've already got a designated use for that part of the ground. Because they didn't put a buildings on it or something else, they're putting a golf course on it.
Okay.
They shouldn't use it twice, get the benefits of it twice.
Well, I hope Mr.
Rogers, can you explain it better? Maybe
I hope that you put that in there until we get a consensus. There's three votes for it. But I sure hope that there's not three votes for that. That's, to me, that's, I totally disagree with that one.
Have you got any other discussion, Mr. Cohen?
No, I just think that's something
golf
should be a good. If you look at many other jurisdictions, you'll see the golf courses are included in.
Could you give us some examples?
Shane, could you check with Newcastle, Kent County, see how they address golf courses
in
their open space, please?
I don't really care what they do up there.
I know you don't.
It's
I'm just saying, but you wouldn't care no matter
what.
Mr. Jones asked the question.
Examples, and I was just wondering what examples.
When we had this conversation once before, there were some examples that were thrown out. I don't have
20 years,
Mr. Cole.
I haven't had. Pardon me.
Could I ask you
a question?
Yes, go ahead.
Are you talking about golf courses where the land would go into separate ownership?
Yes.
Okay, well, that may make a difference. If the developer conveyed it to a separate corporation, then it would be land that may not. How would that work?
I'll use the example. Right now, the owners did buy it, but Salt Pond originally was developed, and we all were here, right? Salt Pond was developed with a golf course. The developer sold off everything, right? And they kept the golf course operation. They had it out there for sale. Nobody bought it. And it ended up that the homeowners did buy it. So it did become part of their open space. So the point is, Dale, they didn't have the benefits of that open space. I think the subdivision that gets the open space should have the benefits from that. They should accrue to those owners.
But who benefits from that open space of Salt
Pond? Open space can be recreational.
The homeowners who bought it now, who own it, they're the ones who can look out there and see the open space. If they don't like it, tell the golf course put houses there.
They could have done that, right? That is possible.
But they wanted the open space.
Okay.
And everybody in there benefits from being at and seeing
the
beauty of it.
Okay. I think what you've done is you've It shouldn't be calculated for density. Is my only concern.
Okay.
Okay.
That's fine.
That's how it should.
Mr. Phillips.
It should be calculated for density.
Mr. Dukes.
I've made my pitch.
Mr. Rogers, you want to make yours? You going to ask, say, Mr. Cole again, so he'd be happy with three times?
In memory of Jack Allen, I say no.
I think it should be
in memory of Jack.
Okay, is there any other discussion on open space?
Shane, though, for the public hearing, would you please, if you could find the other two counties in this state at least address that? I don't care about the Maryland state counties, but unless something jumps out at you glaringly. I may ask that same question.
Could you also, while you're doing that, Shane, say how many do it and how many don't do it? Okay. Maybe that way we need an opinion on both sides.
Well, right. I just said how do they, respect the golf course.
All right. Any other discussion?
Well, go ahead.
Would somebody like to introduce it?
Wait. Jim, let Jim say something before we introduce it. Yes, Jim?
I was just going to say we can't do anything to move forward unless somebody introduces it. But
that's what we're done for. I'll introduce it.
Okay. Open space is introduced.
Okey-dokey. We can take out, we just can't add two, right, Jim?
We can lessen.
Generally, but right. It might depend on what you're adding.
Right, okay. All right.
Or what you're changing.
What's next?
Thanks for hanging in there, Shane. All right, introduction to ordinance.
We have two, I believe.
I'm only getting my address right.
First one, an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from an AR1 agricultural residential district to a MR medium density residential district for a certain parcel of land in Lewisberry Hills 100 containing 9.33 acres of Barry Baker.
Where is it?
The second one is an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from AR1 agricultural residential district to CR1 commercial residential district for a certain parcel of land, Cedar Creek 100 containing 10 acres, the Johnson Associates LLC.
I introduce it.
That's all.
Additional business? Yeah, that's you, Dan? You want in? No? No?
He's holding off for a year.
I'll make a motion, we recess to 1:30.
Second.
Second, yeah, there is a second. The move second, we recess to 1:30, Mr. We do have something for council in the, what do you call it, room, Dan?
I'll be back.
Yes.
How you doing, Bruce?
I'm almost done.
Stickles.